welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my loves. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Happy to be here with you guys today. I have a really heartening conversation to have with you guys today about generational health. It's been something that's been on my mind a lot for various reasons that I will talk about. And I thought it would be good to bring it to the podcast as its own topic. I think I've touched on it a bit in interviews and in my Instagram and in comments that I've made on my community, but it's definitely it's something that's really, really important. So I'm gonna talk about that today. I want to tell you that this morning, before I jumped on air, I had my monthly Q&A session with my membership community, and it was fantastic. So many people showed up, had incredible questions, and these Zooms are just so personal. We just sit together and they ask their questions, I answer them. People are just smiling and nodding and writing in the chat and connecting with each other. I noticed in the chat this morning, people in the UK were like, I'm here. Like, let's friend each other on Facebook or let's exchange information. So we're really building international community here, which is fantastic. So if you're interested in joining my membership community, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and scroll down just a touch where you'll see the link to join the membership community. It's $99 a month. And for that, you get 2 live Zooms with me, a 3-hour community Zoom that I do a teaching, and then we all journal speak together and we meet in small groups and everyone asks questions and we spend a whole morning together. And then another meeting with just an hour-long Q&A that everybody – we're just a hangout. It's just me. On the big community group, it's Lisa and me, and we're presiding over it together, and we're able to both give our input and to really give you the space to not only connect with us but to connect with each other. In the Q&A, it's just me hanging out, very casual, answering your questions. And then, of course, you are a member then of our private community where every day – Lisa and I are there. I'm there very often answering questions and giving you guidance. And you guys are giving each other guidance. So just a quick plug for community, because as this group is growing and becoming more vibrant, it's really, really helping people. So if you're interested in joining us, please go over to thecureforchronicpain.com. Scroll down. You'll see the place to join. Okay. That's all the housekeeping I need to talk about today. I want to talk about generational trauma versus generational health. And a lot of things lately have gotten me thinking about this. You know, if you're a fan of my work, you're often hearing me use myself as my best example. And one of the ways that I am sharing my personal story is that I talk a lot about my dad. I talk a lot about my dad being a person who shaped my personality by being so critical and requiring so much of me and allowing his discontent to bleed over into our relationship, his personal discontent with his life. And I became this great white hope of, you know, him feeling like he did something right in the world by having this child. And, you know, all of this is important and all of this is my story and I get to have it. So I'm not discounting it under the umbrella of generational trauma. But what I'm saying is that as I get older and as I watch my own children grow, and he's been gone since I was 27. He died when I was young and he was only 53. And so he and I have had a lot of time to heal without the human drama that we had been dancing in for the 27 years that I was alive in his life. And it's helpful. You know, a lot of people who are struggling with relationships with their parents, I often say, you know, I got a pass. My father died. And not that it was easy. In fact, it was terribly hard to grieve through that. But it does open you to have more of a healing process that doesn't continue to have the wound reopened because the person's there being the way they've always been. And I have great empathy and understanding that it's really hard when I watch people try to walk through this work with a person, a parent, a trigger that, you know, is still very actively involved in their life. And I know how hard that is. So my dad and I, for quite a while, have been able to heal. And in that healing, I've become less defensive and less protected, and I'm able to open my lens a little bit and to look at the generational trauma that he was dealing with, how he passed it on to me, and how I have chosen to put up a hard stop on some of those behaviors and shift that generational trauma to generational health, also through the help of my mother. And so I want to talk about that today. So let me be more clear. A lot of people discuss generational trauma. Gabor Maté does a ton of it. He is the child of Holocaust survivors. My father is also was also the child of Holocaust survivors. And I guess, you know, the Holocaust specifically is top of mind right now with all the unrest in the Middle East. And I think so it's actually brought it even more to my attention that, you know, 83 members of my personal family, of course, no one I ever knew, but people that had made up my father's family and my father's father's family, specifically his parents, were killed in Auschwitz. And so my father, growing up as a young boy, traveling all over Europe, really being very displaced following the war, did not have a sense of family or belonging. And that's something, like I said, I've had years to unpack because he's not here, quote unquote, being my abuser. And so I am not constantly defending myself so I can have more space. So if this is not something that's possible for you, I totally get it. For me, I've had more space and I can see what he went through. And I can see how perhaps when he landed in his safe place, which was America, and which was when he was in his early 20s, and he met my mother later on, and they had this baby in his late 20s, and it was me. I'm the only child of my parents, that he would be really compelled, maybe unconsciously compelled, to behave in certain ways unto me that were handing generational trauma, the generational trauma that was handed to him both cellularly and behaviorally from his parents who had suffered so much loss and who had struggled so much to stay safe in post-war Europe as Jews. And then he was now safe in America with this child. And he looked to me, I think, and said, "You have everything. There's no problem for you. You know, you should be what I decide you should be." Now, of course, nobody has a free pass in life. Nobody has a life without problems. And I am sure that my upbringing in terms of strife did not compare to his, and his did not compare to his parents. So this is not trying to make things equal. This is trying to say that until we wake up to the ways in which we are carrying on unconsciously our generational trauma, we don't have that much of a hope of circumventing it. And I think that my father was very asleep. I really do. I mean, even in conversations we had toward the end of his life, and he wasn't sick, by the way. He died very suddenly in sort of a freak situation. So it wasn't like he had an end of life where we had a time to really take stock and have these conversations. But toward the end of what now I know was the end of his life, his years before he passed away, we did have conversations where I was in my early 20s and I was able to be honest with him about some of the ways that I was feeling about my upbringing. And he was just completely unwilling to budge. He was like, "I believe in what I did with you and to you, and I would not change a thing." And it was like super hurtful to me at the time to hear that, because I had been so injured and I was a young person and I was a little bit dramatic, but I was assigning every problem I had to this critical and somewhat emotionally abusive upbringing. And I wanted to say something to him. And his response was, I would do it all the same. And so in retrospect, what I notice in that, in knowing and being a therapist is that he was very unaware. He was very asleep when it came to any perspective. And that was because I believe his generational trauma was so thick. It was a veil that was very thick and opaque, and he could not see through it. And so I now am one generation down, and I think about the fact that without awareness and without the awakenings that I've had throughout my life, perhaps my veil would be too thick as well. But there are a couple factors that I believe have led me to be able to thin it out enough to see through it. One of which was I had a very loving and attentive mother. And by the way, my father was not an unloving person. He loved me fiercely. He just, alongside loving me fiercely, was incredibly critical and controlling, whereas my mother wasn't. My mother was more, almost maybe to a fault, you know, however you are is perfect, you know. And so it was an interesting dynamic. But so there's that. So there's the fact that I did have that sense that I wasn't all bad, which I've discussed with my mother, and I've said to her in my years, you know, as I'm starting to really, really get it, like thanked her for how important that has been for me, to know that I have that gift of generational health. So it wasn't just generational trauma that was being handed down to me. It was generational health. And I know my mom had to wake up to do that because my Nana, her mother, was also very loving, but also really controlling, and they struggled with that. So my mom made a choice to not do that with me. And so essentially what I want to talk about when I talk about generational trauma versus generational health is that each of us, as we look toward the next generation, whether we are parents or coaches or teachers or aunts and uncles or guardians or caretakers, any role we play with the next generation, we are empowered right now in this moment, maybe even today as you're listening to my words, we are empowered to wake up a little more. There is intentionality that is possible when we're not walking around totally asleep. And waking up happens in iterations, and it's not all at once, which is great, or else it would be really overwhelming. But as little hints are revealed to us that we could become more awake and aware of our behaviors, that's such an opportunity to know that we have the freedom to pass down our generational trauma or to pass down our generational health. And it is never too late. One of the things I hear a lot in my communities is, but I've already treated my kids like this for so many years. Like, have I already screwed it up so badly? Like, is it even worth it? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. It is always worth it. Always. There is always a possibility of rewriting this timeline of hurt and of helping our kids be less susceptible to the triggers that we maybe were so susceptible to, and to help them create that pause and create that space between the stimulus and the response, that we don't, then we're not reacting machines, that we can pause and we can respond to life, and we can help them do that. And how do we do that? Well, there are a few things. The first thing I'll say about generational trauma versus generational health is that generational trauma is so unconscious that we're just enacting it upon our next generation, whereas generational health has to be intentional. So in order to change this dynamic that perhaps you're stuck in, or to begin as you mean to go on, if maybe you're a new parent, is to be really awake and aware of our responses to things, to be curious, to be super curious. So for example, when my kids do something that I have a visceral reaction to, a reaction of, I want to change that, I want to fix that, I want to control that, I want them to be different, I want them to be better. When that happens for me, the first thing I do is I pause, and instead of just going right at them, I say to myself, why? Why do you need them to be different? Is this about you, or is this about them? This is what being awake means. And then I can maybe go to my journal speak practice and do some inner child work. I can go back to the age I was when, you know, I was experiencing this particular struggle, whether it be with school or relationships or, you know, self-loathing. And I can say to my inner child, this is inner child work that I teach often. Hey, Nicole, in 10th grade, what was it like to be you in, you know, love relationships or in school or in pressure you put on yourself? What was it like to be you then? Like, tell me. And what she'll do, my 10th grade self, when I do this exercise is I open my document, I ask the question, and then I put my 20 minutes on the clock, typical journal speak practice, and I let her talk to me. Here's what it's like to be me in school. Here's what happened last week with Jeff or with Samantha. You know, I'm faking names because I don't want to call people out. But, you know, like I talk about details. I tell this older version of me what it's like to be in my house with my messed up parents or with money or with my boyfriend or with my assignment that I feel like I screwed up. You know, I just do my best. I can't remember everything about what it was like to be in 10th grade, but I remember feelings and I start telling the story. So I make sure that the person that I am correcting, meaning my actual children, is not me. I am not trying to overcorrect in my parenting in order to heal something in me that is not them. You know, we might seem similar to our kids, but we're not the same. There is no way that your child is having the exact upbringing and experience as you had. It doesn't even matter how similar you are to your own parents. It's just a different experience all around. And so when we can be aware and awake and pause and not completely react with the initial trigger and emotion behind, you know, what we might feel about them, that is when we press the stop on the generational trauma and we can turn it to generational health. You know, generational trauma would be your kid is acting in a way that feels so similar to something that went on with you that without even thinking, you're going to try to correct them or control them or change them. And it's like we all are so susceptible to that. There's no shame in it. But when you can pause and have that awareness, you get a choice. And as I often say, we are here to get free. That's what we're here. We're here to get free from all the ties that bind, and choices mean that we're free. People who are not free have no choices. They don't have autonomy. They don't have agency. You are free if you have choices. And if you have a choice as to how you behave toward a young person that's triggering you, then you are free. If you have a choice, you can decide how to behave. And sometimes, you know, we're all parents in here and however you're affecting the next generation, we're all in it. There are times that you're going to just react. That's fine. You forgive yourself. And there are times where you are going to be thoughtful about it and still do the fixy, savey, controlly thing. That's also fine. But the more awake and aware you are and the more you can parse what is yours and what is theirs, that's how we turn generational trauma into generational health. Because what generational health is that we are now passing down good behaviors, loving behaviors, supportive behaviors, behaviors that show our children and our young people that we see them as who they are, not the next iteration of us. And we then empower them to know who they are. So when they one day will have an influence over this next generation of theirs, they'll be able to even more readily and easily allow those little people to be who they are. And, you know, I credit my first awakening to this concept of generational health as my first journal speak. You know, if you guys haven't heard my story, go back to episode one of this podcast. Episode one, which is my story, and then a subsequent episode, I think it might be episode two, is Journal Speak Your New Best Friend. Those episodes will show you how Journal Speak was born through my experience of terrible, terrible life-stopping back pain that woke me up because it was such a bucket of cold water to the head because I couldn't function. And then I, you know, learned about Dr. Sarno's work and I did my first journal speak. And when I started to look at parenting, I said, you know, that dreaded phrase that was the first line of journal speak ever penned, which is, I hate being a mother. And it was so insane because I am like literally the most maternal person you will ever meet. I love being a mother, but there was something in there. There was a voice I didn't understand that was screaming, and it was screaming through my back that had to come out. And the way it voiced it was, I hate being a mother. And that's when I got to be curious. And I got to say, what is going on in there? Why is this feeling so big? And I'm not going to go through the whole thing. You can go back and listen to the episode, but I unpacked it. And what I got to was that I had created a situation in my unconscious where I was expecting my children to fix my life, to heal my little heart, to make everything perfect. And when they came out as real human beings and actual kids whose job is not to do that, whose job is simply to be themselves, the unconscious devastation was so great that my whole body was essentially shutting down. And when I got to that truth and I was able to unpack it and I was able to understand it, that's when I began really, first of all, my pain went away completely. You know, that's my whole story. And also I was able to really move from generational trauma to generational health, because that experience and all the journal speaks and growth and experience that it led to enabled me to parent my three children not through the lens of my own trauma and pain and hurt. It allowed me to parent them as them. And I know for a fact, because I have these three really spirited, artistic children who are like, literally my kids are all artists in one way or another. And I've been able to parent them and really sit beside them and help them realize who they want to be, because I wasn't parenting them through my own lens of pain and suffering. And by doing that, that's generational health. That's handing them their power. That's saying, you don't need to please me in order to be good enough, like I was desperate to do for my father. You need to be a good person. You need to be an upstander. I have rules and I have standards and I have expectations. I'm not like some freewheeling mother who says anything you are is fine. I mean, I'm certainly a person who has had influence, but my influence stops where I see that it is trying to feed and save and fix something in myself. My influence is about them and about helping shape them into people. And I'm sure I'm screwing it up a certain percentage that they won't. That's the hope, that there is a message I'm sending through my behavior and sometimes through my restraint, that they are now going to be empowered with the next generation, when their parents, when their teachers, when their coaches, whatever they choose to be, that they're going to look toward those people and even allow those people to be more themselves. There will even be less of a function of their muddied lens that they have to look through in order to parent. And that's generational health. My father was raised, he was born in post-war Europe. It was chaotic beyond. He, you know, his people, the Jews, were so hated that he actually had to go to church and fake that he wasn't Jewish in order to not get killed. And they had to move around Europe, and he never had a home base. And he was sent away to boarding school very young to, save his life, essentially. And so a lot of things happened to that man way before he became my father. That was extremely traumatic. And so he passed, and to some extent, I should say that he also was part of generational health, because he certainly didn't do to me what the world and, you know, whatever his surroundings did to him. So, I mean, we're all doing our best to improve, but to be awake and to be able to know that you have choices on your influence and on your pausing and on your ability to see people for who they are rather than who we need them to be, that is real, real generational health. And it's something that is much more in our power than I think people realize. So I just wanted to call attention to that, because I think it's really, really important. And it's such a place, like, talk about changing the world, right? I mean, changing the world is such a phrase that has become so light at this point. Like, oh, I want to change the world. You know, I mean, what does it even mean? But let's think about what it actually means to change the world. What it means to change the world means to influence each person individually. And how do we do that as a collective? We do that by working on ourselves. It's literally the only way. Ram Dass, oftentimes in his lectures, was asked by parents, you know, how can I do right by my child? And he would always say the same thing. Work on yourself. Work on yourself. Work on yourself. It is the only thing within your power. And so that's what I offer you. That's what we're doing here on this whole podcast and my whole work in my communities, through my courses, whatever it is, however you interact with this work, that's what I'm doing, helping you to work on yourself. Because when you work on yourself, it is the greatest gift you can give to move from whatever generational trauma that has been enacted upon you to generational health, to handing our kids the tools to know how to let go when they need to let go, how to stand up for themselves when they need to stand up for themselves, how to draw boundaries when life is too much for them. I spent years having no idea how to draw boundaries because I was constantly people-pleasing and fawning as a child. So how do you draw boundaries if your life literally depends on making other people happy? How do you draw boundaries? Well, by doing work on myself and continuing to wake up more and more and more, and then practicing. Something like drawing boundaries requires practice. It's like building a muscle. You have to do it when it's really, really uncomfortable and live through that and then say, wow, okay, since life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, and I did that and I survived and I feel actually empowered, okay. It still hurt to draw the boundary, but it hurt worse not to. So here we are. And as you do that over and over again, you start being able to make the choice more readily. And that's growth. And that's working on yourself. And then that's something that you can impart to the next generation. So I just wanted to take a moment and jump on and say that, because when I think something and I'm thinking it day in and day out, and it's my companion and my exercise, and it's my companion as I lay down to go to sleep, I always think, well, then bring it to the podcast, you know, because if it's this important to me, it's probably important to at least one of you. So I'm glad to have had this time with you guys today. I hope that today is a good day. And if it's not, I hope that our time together helped a little bit, I hope. I send you big love. If the events of the world are causing you great stress and despair, I just send you big love. And I will tell you the same thing, the same energy and the same message, which is when we are in the space of pain and suffering that we can't control, what you can do is you can work on yourself. You can take care of yourself. You can do what you can do to know yourself more deeply, because no matter what you involve yourself in, that kind of knowledge and growth and empathy and tenderness you feel toward yourself will translate to whatever else you're doing. All right, guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, please hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. Brings it to the top of the list for people when they're searching for chronic pain or anything they're suffering with, and it really helps. I appreciate it. And until next time, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.